Welcome to Take the Red Pill,
where we explore the realities within our reality.
We are your hosts, David Deere
and Donald Dalton.
This episode, Donald and I are going to be joined by some very special guests. We've got Debbie and Sean Michael from Twin Flames Radio. Twin Flames Radio is an international weekly call-in show on Ask One Radio, where they invite guests and callers to participate in psychic-related discussions, and they also give readings. It is a live show every Wednesday night. And as Twin Flames, Debbie and Sean Michael have come together, bringing their psychic gifts together from birth that they've had to help other people around the world with classes, with readings, with workshops, with all sorts of things that they offer people. Debbie has a special interest in feng shui and working with animals. Sean's special interest is in psychic investigations and paranormal research. Both of them are Reiki master teachers as well. So we've got four Reiki masters. Yay. It's kind of fun. Again, the radio show is Twin Flames Radio. They are on live every Wednesday night, 10 p.m. Eastern Time, 7 p.m. Pacific Time. The address for their website is www.twinflamesradio.com, which is hosted by www.askoneradio. That's the numeral one, askoneradio.com. So, Debbie, Sean, welcome to the show. We're glad to have you on.
Yes, hi. Definitely welcome. Welcome.
It's nice to be here.
Thank you, gentlemen, for inviting us.
Yeah, it's our pleasure.
Definitely. David, we're starting to say the exact same thing at the same time.
It's kind of a deja vu thing. It's like the black cat in the Matrix thing.
Yeah.
Just from our technical thing, we're kind of reliving this thing.
Yeah. So, Sean, Debbie, I'm curious. Can you give me some of your kind of like your background story, kind of like your how did you start Twin Flames Radio? How did you meet? Because I only briefly know some of the story, but I'd definitely like to know a little bit more, and I think our listeners would too.
Well, Sean and I met about 2 years ago. Actually, before we met, we put out to the universe that we were looking for someone that's very similar to us in our interests and whatnot as far as growth and spiritual pattern. So I think we just put that out, and we met at a Reiki Share local shop that we just decided to meet, and it was almost like, you know, intended, and we just became friends, and we just realized that we had a lot in common, and it's pretty amazing, strong connection right away. So we, you know, decided to do the radio show not too much longer, probably a year later. Our mission is to assist people with their spiritual development as well. Everybody has their own path, but there's so many different aspects to being aware of different new thinking as well as old. It could be that we're rediscovering this after thousands of years as well. So,
I like that.
Yeah. Nice. Very nice.
Yeah. So we're going to be new and improved thought process of what probably has been from some time in the past. But this time I feel that as well as an ascension or enlightening, I think we're going to get there as far as collectively. So I think that this is the time where we finally push through to that new level, and that's why this 2012 and everything from the past that so many cultures were involved in throughout so many areas on this earth, as well as from other cultures elsewhere in the galaxy, we're being reintroduced to that. So we find out all the little missing pieces, and it's kind of fun and exciting. So all of these people are put into your lives for a reason, and we're excited to share that with other people who are awakening and finding the same thing, and you see it like a soft disclosure going on in enlightenment of technologies of Earth's just vibration going higher. You know, we're being plugged in. We didn't, it had a veil before. We're it's hopefully lifting up more and more, and we all are connected, so we're all one in the end.
Yeah, I remember years ago, and I think I mentioned this on a previous episode, I can't remember which one, but when I was learning a lot of the stuff that I know back in like the late 90s, early 2000s, I read somewhere that for the longest time in human history, someone somewhere would have like this spiritual truth come to them roughly once every 100 years, give or take. And they said that over the 1900s, that had increased to, you know, almost every 5 to 10 years. And that at the end of the century, beginning of the millennium of the 2000s, that was getting to a point where it was happening every hour. And somebody was having, this huge monumental spiritual truth somewhere in the world every hour. And I think probably now it's happening probably every minute, if not quicker. And so I find that very exciting.
Yeah. Donald, I would concur to that. I have clients from all over, both Debbie and I have clients from all over the globe that we talk to from a diversity of background, religious, spiritual background, ethnic background, cultural speaking. If you put all those variables together, we see a common pattern of this awakening, so to speak, like an intuition awakening, the oneness, the expansion of consciousness. It's a real fascinating topic, but there isn't a day that I go by that I don't meet somebody or somebody doesn't contact me that shares that same story, that either their life path has changed or something spiritually changed significantly for them. Mm-hmm. And it's where they're expanding their horizon, so to speak, and their view of reality and how their life is moving forward. So I think it's a good thing.
Oh yeah, definitely.
I use the analogy that in the last couple of years, technology, or if you look at the last 25 years, technology, the human race is just, or even before that, just the path of that and has just increased as far as advancement. It was only inevitable that along with the connection of communication that we have in modern technology, that spirituality would shift to, and the collectiveness of consciousness is one of those topics that can be correlated to that, perhaps.
Yeah, you know, the collection of consciousness and the communication tool that you're talking about with the technology, I think they're analogous in a way, and hopefully we don't get so dependent on the technology that we lose sight of that it's really just a tool to do what we could naturally do without it. And my theory is that as we start to our vibrationally shift or ascend or expand or whatever you want to call it, the parameter, how we define ourselves as individuals, are going to blur. I think about this like we tend to separate ourselves at our skin for all intents and purposes. And I think as we evolve or expand or ascend, however you want to call it, we're going to realize that our identity and our ego and our own consciousness is not limited to just the skin demarcation.
I certainly would add to that that, you know, while we've seen individuals that say, what's in it for me, what's in it for me, what's in it for me, as they go through their daily activities, we might see a shift in that is what's in it for everyone, for my neighbors. Mm-hmm. And I feel that, I see that with clients that are becoming more clairsentient, you know, mm-hmm. conscious of other people's emotions and feelings, from just saying, you know, Sean, I think I'm going crazy. I went to this business meeting and I walked into this room and I just felt the anxiety in the air. I knew there was something bad going to happen. And then they just announced mm-hmm. that we're going to have 50% layoff at my employer. I can't believe this just happened. Well, let me explain that to you. That's your intuition kicking in, and your perception of reality is changing for you. And that's just a concrete example for the average person out there that perhaps when they say the left brain, right brain theory, that they're opening up their conscious and they're expanding their intuition. And I see that on a daily occurrence when I have clients contacting me. And many of them, it's the first time they've talked to an intuitive consultant. Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow.
And in those situations, I'm very grateful to be able to be the first one that they interact with, because it's okay. It's okay to ask those questions as you progress daily with your life. To always question things. Always question things.
And Sean, that's absolutely amazing, because I'm starting to find more and more clients, clients are starting to find me that are like that. I just recently had a client not too long ago that was exactly what you're talking about. very extremely gifted intuitive, very gifted empathic, psychic, whatever word you want to use, able to process years worth of emotions in just hours, and freaked me out a little bit, and that's why he was contacting me. But when we started talking, we got to that point where, like what you're saying with your clients, where it's just like, you know, I have these thoughts and I haven't really told anybody about them because I don't want to be locked up in a, you know, in institution, you know, being fed drugs with people thinking I'm crazy. I'm like, and, you know, I was like, okay, so this thing right here, if you talk to the pagan people, they'll say, yeah, that's what's happening. That's cool. You talk to the New Age people, that's what this issue right here is dealing with. This one right here, that's just cool. I've really run into somebody who is working at that, but that's working on this level and this level. And so when they and wrote back afterwards, like, hey, man, thank you so much for talking to me. I don't feel like I'm as crazy as I've been feeling like I have been for years, having all this stuff happen. And so, yeah, Sean, I'm right there with you. I'm just like, oh, it's so awesome to see people like being able to come forward and say, hey, is this weird? Is this crazy? And someone who is an intuitive say, no, not at all. You're cool.
Well, what about the people that are really stonewalled, that are really trapped in the three-dimensional duality, and the people who are really reticent, who are wanting to preserve on to the, like you guys were saying, the me-first kind of idea? There are people who have an overwhelming amount of influence in our society that are like that. For example, we see, and I don't want to be, you know, I don't want to be the, let's, you know, pitchforks and torches kind of guy, but you know, you got the bankers and the big shareholders and the oil companies and the I don't know,
but they're losing power more and more.
I ran out of people to
they are losing power.
I mean, if you just look over the past decade or even over the past 5 years, you're seeing that their business as usual is not holding true anymore. It's starting to break down and people are getting really upset. And
But there are people who would beg to differ that say that, no, the power structure is still firmly implanted.
Well, you're right that it is implanted, but then we have also the 99%, the people that are becoming more aware, and it's so blatant. Now we've gotten the scales tipped to one side that, unfortunately, the greedy become greedier. And before, when we weren't quite aware of what was going on as much, we didn't question it as much. But in the last 30, 40 years, it's gotten to the point where it's so blatant that everybody's like, wait a minute, you'd have to be really dumb not to notice what's going on. You know?
And I just want to add on to kind of what you're saying there, where it's like the old ways of working things is not working as well. But like David said, it's still working. So the people that are involved in that school of thought, they're saying this works. We've proven that this works. So they're working harder and harder and harder to make sure that it maintains the way it's always been. And then you have all these other people all over the world saying, yeah, we're not as thrilled with that idea. And I've been watching the Olympics, and one of the coolest things I've heard that I don't remember hearing recently is that they said the home team normally has a 50% advantage right off the bat. And I'm like, oh, really? And I knew instantly that that's because if you have a whole stadium full of people that are going for this one person or this one athlete, that's a lot different than having, you know, a quarter of a stadium there. And I look at it the same way with the big corporations and stuff. We're having more and more people say, we're not going to put up with this anymore. They're having less and less thought power, which leads to personal power and everything else, to maintain the status quo.
Okay. Yep.
They're saying, we're not going to take it. No, we ain't going to take it. We're not going to take it anymore.
Twisted Sister. Ah.
No, that's quiet riot. What kind of rocker were you, Donald?
But, you know, gentlemen, I think you got a good point. You know, I myself have a finance background and was a trader at one time. I've run the complete gamut from that life path to another. And I have seen from my own experiences the shift from people that work in that environment, through whether it be through clients, through friends, former colleagues. There certainly is a disparity of wealth out there here in North America that's getting worse. And a lot of people are asking whether or not their consciousness is expanding. They're looking at the, hey, wait a second, this is beginning to look like a raw deal situation. When you start questioning things and start wondering, okay, wait a second, I just blind trust is now out there. People are understanding there might be something more to the LIBOR question of the LIBOR scandal in Europe. The whole debt system in place right now with fiat currencies that we have out here and that we focus on as far as a foundation for our currency and for how we value commodities and everything based on a fiat currency. All those things are going to be put up into major questions here coming up, in my opinion. I've actually gone on the record, Debbie, on our Twin Flames radio show, where in Europe there's some major concerns. And I've repeatedly have stated and I've quoted in our blog that there is some things going down. In particular, we saw it with Greece. They were able to sustain that. But as we move forward with Spain, that's going to be a big, big question mark, whether or not they can keep the system in place when that implodes. Okay. And I'm going to say that I don't see it happening. I see the domino effect taking place at that point.
You guys are aware about BRICS, the alliance with Russia, China, Brazil, India, and more countries. 150 countries are on this currency system that they're starting. It's a equity-based system where it's not based on debt anymore. So that's what we're going for. That's what they're trying to implement into another system. Because how they kept us in control was the debt. Debt equals control. The whole, you guys might have been aware of the Jekyll Island, that book.
Yes, The Creature from Jekyll Island.
Correct. So we know what went down.
It's a great book, by the way.
Yeah, I haven't read the whole thing. I have.
I haven't either. I'll be honest with you. It's it's a hard read to read all the way through. But if you can get through chunks of it to get the idea,
okay. So
it's awesome.
What's the brief story with Jekyll Island? Because I'm not familiar with it.
Okay, you take it, David.
The idea is it starts by talking about how fiat money that you've heard Sean refer to. It talks about how the banking industry there was kind of a, I don't want to call them a cabal, but a group that got together that really kind of formed this concept of how to make money from nothing, how to use interest rates to actually manufacture money, and how to make an economic system dependent on that interest to increase money, basically. Oh, and so there's nothing behind it. Gold has no value. It's not there. The money, the dollar's not based on gold. It's long. It's based on debt.
Exactly.
Okay.
And gotcha. So over the years, this goes back hundreds of years. These families were the Rothschilds in Europe. Then later Rockefellers and other families. Anyway, J.P. Morgan and all that. So they all got together, but that was later. So that's in the turn of the century. And then the Federal Reserve was made, and it's not federal. It's as federal as Federal Express. Yeah. So,
I like that.
the whole thing, but going back 100 years, hundreds of years ago, was the whole war concept of creating war so that these really super wealthy people can fund both sides and control the outcome, control when they know when it's going up and down, and then take away the backing of the gold. I mean, they took all the gold away from people back, I think it was in the 30s, that they didn't want everybody to have that security. It's almost like the control was numbers on a screen, now that they have that. But now it's not backed by anything, and that fiat, you can have fraction of a percent, and they keep on loaning and loaning. It's a house of cards.
So. Yeah, it is a house of cards.
Yeah.
Well, and that just proves the point. Okay, we have this challenge. We all are facing it. It's multinational. It's not just United States. It's going to affect everybody, including the China. The Chinese banks are not going to be insulated when this happens. So if you have this issue, everyone's affected. There has to be a solution. the solution probably would be a commodities-based currency that would be backed on multiple variables, and whether it being gold, oil, wheat, corn, who knows? Something's got to be fixed because it's going to affect us all, and we all are going to be affected by it.
Well, and the suppression of technology is another aspect to it.
You were just reading my mind, Debbie. I'm dead serious when I say that. You know, there are four psychics in a room here, so it's not nobody should be surprised. I asked that, Debbie, because I was sitting there while we were having this conversation just before you said that. I said, man, you know, our economy would change as we knew it if free energy was released.
I mean, if you think about it, if we just had no worries about filling your tank and your heating and gas bill and, you know, that we could flash to some place in a blink of an eye that actually we can do. It just hasn't been allowed for us to have that ability. And again, this goes back to the control. The control of some technology. They don't want us to know because it's control. These things are available. Tesla was definitely suppressed. We know that. You know, JP Morgan, he went there to him and said, please back me. And he said no. And the reason why was because it couldn't be harnessed. It was free energy way back then. And guess who did get funded? Edison, because he found a way to harness it and make money. It's all about money. And yes, those are those greedy people, but they're going to get fewer and fewer as we collectively just oust them out. And they are part of us, but we have to remember in the end to forgive, and we just either contain them in some sort or, you know, go on from here and get a create a better life for all of us, because we will have that if that's what we really want. And I think this is moving to the 2012 and the whole, all these ancient cultures have indicated we work together to get what we want, and that's what we'll have. So I'm positive that we will meet our galactic brothers and sisters and collectively get on to a better plane that we deserve.
That kind of brings up the question of something that we briefly mentioned before we started recording, where we were talking about soul promises and soul connections and stuff like that. The idea is kind of like we're talking on a global scale, and what you just mentioned at the end there, on a galactic scale. I'm curious how you and Sean and see that those pre-incarnation promises and ideas that we made on a global personal scale all coming together with this that we're talking about.
Well, we decided our soul contract before we came here. We decided to be with the people collectively, even us that we're talking right now. We just this was a honor to be here. You know, as far as people that were in your life, it could have been in other lifetimes as well. We came back and we're going to get it right, you know, just push through this part. And I think it's part of the love message of knowing who we are, that we all come from the same source, and forgiving what's happened, because it really didn't happen in our minds. A lot of that has to do, you know, it's quite deep, but when we get to that point where we can step through that, I think the false ideas and veil that we think that we've had such difficulties and thinking that we deserve, you know, less than, will go away. They'll all disappear. We all hold hands and like go right on through the rainbow. It's almost like, you know.
So this is kind of like a spiritual enlightenment ascension growing pain?
Yes. Okay. I don't know. Take
go ahead, David.
Well, I wanted to ask this because and Donald and I talked about this in a previous conversation. We're talking about soul contracts right now. We're talking about kind of soul contracts and kind of the agreements we've kind of the roles we've agreed to play in the incarnation and in the point of society. So my question is, if we tie this a little bit back to what we've been talking about, those people that are in a lot of power, say maybe the JP Morgans, say the 1%ers, say the people, the big oil tycoons, are they playing a deliberate role that is agreed upon by the mass human consciousness to help our own growth? So maybe they're not the enemies, but maybe they're kind of the good guys in disguise. Not, I don't want to say they're good guys. Don't get me wrong. Maybe this is a healthy function they're performing, even though it seems like it's really dark. What's your guys' thoughts on that?
Correct.
Well, David, I can answer twofold. First, yeah. You know, for the listening audience that understand this concept, is that with the Akashic record, there is that incarnation agreement that perhaps you come in as the person that wears the black hat, so to speak, the odd character, the character who has got the karmatic agreement and portrays that on for others in a soul group. Now, for those listeners who, you know, perhaps don't subscribe to that spiritual view, they might have the experience of just from a more of a simplistic perspective of, you know, meeting somebody that they feel really good, first impression, like, gosh, I know that person from somewhere, or, you know, that person really rubs me the wrong way when I meet them, and or they just drive me nuts. That could be from a soul connection that you might, that person might have had from a previous incarnation, past life experience. So from, while we're talking of them from the 30,000 foot level here, as far as a global scale, for an individual perspective, for an individual, you might come across people in your soul family that perhaps you have a strong connection with, or for individuals that are like us that are more versed on the topic, the Akashic Agreement is something that is a fascinating topic for people to study and read on. That is that discussion out there that we all have a predetermined life theme that we come in with. For example, some might be forgiveness. Another might be a karmatic influence on others, such as you talk about the man wearing the black hat or the black coat, so to speak. The character that you describe as far as running the unethical company that's a multinational company, mm-hmm. whatever it be, we all have an interconnectedness and there's a lesson to be learned.
Yeah. And I think, like you said, David, that is part of the agreement. We might have been that king or something back then that did something horrible. We don't know. There's all kinds of things that happen, and we know intuitively that that's probably true. That's why we, when we find out these things, part of human emotion is maybe to be an outraged, upset, and a way, if we give in to some of those emotions, who are really we being upset at ourselves in a round a whole scheme of things way, you know, because at one time we probably did the same thing. So and that's the big picture, you know. So
there was a podcast I was listening to. If I remember which one it is, I'll put it in the show notes. One of their theories was the reason we're kind of in this shift right now in this ascension process is that all those past lives that we've gone through so many iterations, so many of our souls have gone through so many iterations that we're almost, we've watched the reruns too many times and there's not really much more we can get out of replaying these tapes again. So yeah. it's almost like, you know, I've learned as much as this is going to teach us this particular route.
Karmic, oh my goodness. Okay,
so it's like a saturation
I heard
almost.
Karmic nerds, because, you know, nerds, if you're into something, and I've done this too, you know, if there's something you're really into, for the longest time it was like Star Trek The Next Generation. I could watch the same episode over and over and over again and still enjoy it. And I'm just like, when David, when you said that, I was just like, karma, yes, I'm going to be a Viking because I like to, you know, murder and destroy people. Now I'm going to be a Mongol because I still like to murder and destroy people. Okay, now I'm going to be an investment banker. Wait a second. You know, and I was just like, karma nerds doing the playing the same picture, the same show over and over again.
I don't think it's one incarnation. I think it's the sum. Well, their theory, and I can understand what they're saying or what they're trying to glean at is the mass consciousness has experienced the permutations not the one incarnation, because my understanding of an incarnation is that for a soul level, the soul wants to broaden its experiences mm-hmm. as much as possible, and it varies the kind of incarnations so they can see duality, so they can play both roles. They can play the victim and the perpetrator and things like that.
Correct. Yeah.
So I thought it was kind of an interesting theory, and I was curious of you guys' take on it, so I threw it out there.
Yeah.
Well, you know, karma really, from a perspective, you can think of past life karma or current life path karma. And that's a really broad topic, but you might see that the expression of that person's an old soul, so to speak. That's a very common expression that you'll hear.
Yeah.
That regardless of an individual's religious denomination or spirituality that they subscribe to, you will hear that. Oh, that person is an old soul. And they'll say that in definition to a young child, to an old person. And really, if you study that concept, is that it's a fascinating perspective in the sense that what are they getting at? Is it the person, how they carry themselves currently and the role that they play in their family, with their peers, or with their career that they have? Or is it something perhaps a little more deeper than that? And that's the fundamental question. Karma is something that, you know, we talk about. It's a common topic and expression out there. But how do you become karma free? How do you become karma free? Nobody ever talks about that.
Mr. Clean.
Let's talk about it here. Let's be the somebodies that talk about it. I want to dig it. I want to break it down.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Who wants to dive into that?
Hey, David. David, you chomped at the bit. Let's have you go first.
Being karma free?
Yeah, how do you become karma free?
Well, you know, I was thinking about some stuff I read, and I don't remember if it was Messages from Michael or one of those books. And
oh, yeah.
Have any of you guys read that?
Yeah, the Messages from Michael. The
yeah.
Yeah.
If this sounds like it's from that book, let me know. And if it doesn't, say do a buzzer sound or whatever. but the messages, I think one of them were saying that when you've lived a huge breadth of experiences and your karmic slate is relatively clean, that when you come back, your last incarnations, which I personally don't like, because that implies that incarnations subscribe to time, and if time is simultaneously happening, how can that be, kind of thing. But the idea is that when you're in your latest incarnations, that you start to live maybe homeless or as a baby that dies young or one of those things. And I don't know that I subscribe to that, but that's one of the ideas of your clean karma thing. I don't know.
And the other thing that I've heard is kind of even blows it out farther, as far as that it might be that we've already been to the different dimensions. Like, okay, so accordingly, there's 12 dimensions, as I understand it. There's all different levels as you get in towards fifth, upwards, the body, the actual physicality isn't there anymore. It goes lighter and lighter as you go up. But anyway, that we might have been in ninth dimension or something, and we were called to this incarnate for spiritual learning, because I hear it's very difficult to be in the third dimension. It's a very much an honor to be here to assist in Gaia's ascension, as well as her, you know, the children and all that. So we were here to get it going, get everybody pushed through and, you know, part of it. There could be people that have that, you know, that have come from another system, another galaxy, another dimension, that are called to that. So it could be that, not that necessarily you are deserving, you know, to be here, or you're punished or anything like that. It's actually what I understand is the galactics learn from what we have been here doing and going through. Basically, quote, stuck in, not really stuck in, but we've been allowed to be in that whole process, to come back with gifts, almost like gifts of knowledge.
Yeah, and I would expand on that too, as far as what Debbie's talking about. You know, when you talk about the different levels, different dimensions, and, you know, reality being like a 3D, 4D dimension, and you have free will of choice, and then of course the understanding of karma and how do you become karma free. It's a difficult question, because with free will, ego gets involved. People will drive down a freeway and see the person holding up the sign when they come off the freeway ramp. This is, you know, work for food, or, you know, disabled veteran, need a few dollars here, and they'll just look over at that person and just turn off the freeway, ignore them, and subconsciously they'll think, well, that's their karma, they created it. And that's where you as an individual have the illusion of the duality existence, that is, the ego gets in the way, because we have two primary emotions that we just function on a daily basis. That's emotions that are based on love, or the alternative is emotions based on fear. And that's the problem with our duality of existence. It's either love or fear-based emotions that affect us. And of course, our ego gets involved in the whole process. Mm-hmm. But as we progress, the thought is, as we progress to become karma-free, if we get to that point, then the thought is the fifth dimensional reconsciousness, which is like pure love and pure unity.
And how the fear fades away. It's something of the third dimension is fear. When you ascend from that and it kind of falls away, the fear goes away and its love is left over, just what it is, because the duality is no longer there. Right. And you realize you don't deserve that duality, and actually it doesn't exist to begin with, because God is love. Love is God. We are that, part of that. You know, what else is there? It's just a bad dream, you know, basically. And so waking up that to that and realizing our worth. And I think the worth is so important, because after so many years of hundreds of years to be almost brainwashed that we are nothing, you know, we try to tell ourselves that. And that's why it's so important, the love of self. And that was one of the most important messages from all of the different religions, is to love. And that's, I think, our way, our key to unlocking a lot of that.
Yeah. And for me, I've heard two different things, and one of them is my understanding, and then one of them is something I've heard. But the first one is, my understanding is being able to express ourselves, express our divinity, express who we are at the core, without fear. And I think the more we can do that, the more we reduce our karmic debt, as it were, the more that we're able to live our divine purpose confidently. Because I always use the analogy, we're all in this together. We all have our roles to play, like actors in a play. Well, if, let's say, the star doesn't show up, then the storyline starts to fall and just doesn't look very good. And all of a sudden, we hope that it's a show that gets canceled really quickly. Whereas when we are actually presenting ourselves in confidence through our own divinity, we're showing up and playing our part in this whole play. And it all makes this absolutely beautiful, epic storyline of humanity.
I'm going to piggyback on your analogy, because I like it.
Okay, hold on just a moment. That's more of what I believe. And then the other thing that I've heard that I'm just kind of like scratching my head going, maybe not so much, is talk to your higher self or whatever and say, I want to be released of all my karma. And poof, there you go. And that one I have a much more difficult time with, because what I'd said before is we all have our parts to play. And if we remove all that karma, but we still have fear, you know, we're just going to start making up a whole new karma. So anyway, go ahead, David.
Yeah. Oh, well, you're talking about, you're waiting for the star to show up. When you accumulate karma or create karma, it's when you forget that you're not the star. Because what happens if somebody else is a star, what you're doing is you're giving them control over your reality. You burn karma by realizing my reality is of my own creation, and that my circumstances befall me, not that they're my fault, but they're based on a series of choices that I made, and I will continue to make a series of choices that continues to create my life. And I think when you burn karma, when you allow yourself to be the driver of your own car.
Mm-hmm. Which would be expressing yourself out of your divinity without fear or the ego.
Right. Fear is just running away from something that you think you can't control.
Yeah.
Or responding to things that you think are outside of your control. Forgetting everything's all right.
Yeah, exactly. Everything's all right, man.
That's my...
Come into ascension, enlightenment, man. You're going to like it. It's all cool here, yo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's my bit.
Oh, exactly.
The discussion of karma also transcends that when you talk about soul connections. I'm bringing it back to that topic, but karmatic relationships and a soul connection. And okay. I see with clients on a routine basis that perhaps you see, or the listening audience, you have that friend that always dates the same kind of person with the same kind of experience, and they keep not listening to the lessons they learn. And then at the future time, then that person is intercepted, and the soul, that individual, changes and realizes the importance of the experiences they've had, and realizes that there's an awakening. And so there might be individuals that have a karmatic connection with another person, whether it being, a life experience, a dating experience, a friendship, family members, very common. So karmatic experiences and karmatic relationships is another topic out there in relation to this that should be touched, because, you know, it always raises a lot of questions, is that when you feel a connection with somebody, you know, I've had clients come to me saying, you know, gosh, I just feel this great, strong connection with this person, but, you know, he's an alcoholic, or, you know, I just don't like the way he ignores my children, or whatever it be. You have to ask yourself questions like, why is there such a deep connection? Why did you feel this deep, instant attraction? Is it something more that needs to be looked at? Or are you making the same choices based on the experiences and lessons you haven't learned in this life?
Yeah, and I've actually, since I've moved out here to the East Coast, have been surprised how many people I am meeting for maybe 24 hours time, maybe actual face-to-face time, 3 or 4 hours, and then they're in my life, and then they're gone. And when I first got here, that was happening like almost on a monthly basis. I was just like, what is going on here? And then I started seeing a pattern, and the pattern that I saw with my personal experiences with this is that each one of them had a specific piece of information that was absolutely perfect for me at that moment, and that was it. That piece of information led to another understanding that was slightly different from what I had learned before, which started to slowly change some of the choices and beliefs that I had, you know, for most of my life.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, absolutely.
So, do you think that you're getting all these little bits and pieces and little lessons because you're seeing them, or you're seeing the value in the lessons, as opposed to the example Sean gave, which was a person is not seeing the value in the lesson or not realizing that there's a lesson there? And I kind of wonder about this with the karmic draw, mm-hmm. because Donald, just for you guys, Debbie and Sean, Donald and I have had several conversations where we've actually taken opposite sides to some degree on free will versus destiny. And because that's a tricky thing. And I wonder if sometimes it seems like it's destiny only because that karmic attraction, like you said, that person's attracted to someone who maybe forces, not, I don't like that word. I'd like to exchange that word for something better. That influences a lesson onto a person to make it almost so compelling to engage in a certain behavior to force the lesson to the surface. Can we say that maybe that's a function of the karmic ties?
Absolutely.
In other words, to make you feel like you've almost bypassed the free will. So you feel almost like you're out of control, like you don't have any free will. You do, but there's some great magnetic force that it's like can't help falling in love with bastard kind of thing. You know?
Yeah. Or it could be the opposite, you know. I use this example. You have a housemate, you know, you're a college mate or whatever it be, that doesn't get up out of bed to go to work or to their class in the morning, and they constantly sleep in, and you keep warning them, hey, you're going to lose your job or you're going to get kicked out of university, whatever the example. And you got to be the friend that takes a cold bucket of water and throws the bucket of water on them in the morning to wake them up, to say, you've got to change. This is your life path, and I'm here to be of help for you to really awaken and realize, is this the kind of life path you want? So there is also different intrinsic variables that go into our soul connection, because in that case, the awakening could be, while it might be brash for the other person, it's a learning experience for many people involved. So, you know, intervention, so to speak. Yeah.
And from me personally, just on that note, and I'm glad you brought that up because I had not really thought about it to this degree, but I've noticed as a practicing healer, when you actually start being confident as in your abilities as a healer, you start running into a lot of people that want to be healed. For a while there, it got to a point where I was being overwhelmed. I was being mentally, emotionally, completely just drained because I was helping everyone that was coming at me at that time. I had to literally be okay with saying, no, I need to choose who to work with and who not to work with. Well, that feels kind of sad in a way, but it was kind of a self-preservation thing too. And I think that in a karmic relationship, I've started meeting people that I was able to work with and help on a much, much, much deeper level than, you know, just the general populace, where it's like, oh, okay, you have this, well, it's probably this, where I actually have a client or somebody that's like, okay, I'm losing it. Okay, hold on a minute, just calm down. Let's go through this. Now, what about this thing? What about this thing? And it literally changes their whole tone, their whole demeanor, their whole aura, their whole energy for their life at that moment. And then, of course, they have an opportunity to make whatever choices they're going to do after that. We're talking about karmic connections. I believe at some point I literally made the subconscious or possibly conscious thought of, I only want to work with people that are ready to be worked with. In your belief systems, does that also apply along those lines, or is that more of something that I'm just seeing outside somewhere else?
No, I think that's right on, as far as, you know, when you're ready, the teacher appears. And sometimes those people that appear that in our life that are so needy and so demanding, it's almost like a way for us to say, wait a minute, no, before I might have just done whatever, you know, and run myself into the ground and just done whatever and felt, there you go, the guilt or fear of that. And then again, that's the situation's controlling you, and we have to allow ourselves time for ourselves to regenerate and not feel so drained. And those are things that are definitely need to be allowed, and you'd be okay with that, which is just perfectly fine.
So well, with the you're saying about the healer, mm-hmm. Healing thyself, mm-hmm. and what you're talking about is when do you help a person? When do you not help a person? When do you throw cold water on the person who's sleeping in? Since we're talking about karma here, there are some systems of belief that say that your life takes a turn at a certain point, like say at the age of 53. Let's throw that age out there. You take the age of 53 is when somebody has their awakening. Maybe that's the fourth time that somebody, a family, had an intervention for them, and that was the time that it stuck. That there, for some reason, there was, let's call it, a karmic marker that they were not, the change wasn't really meant for them to be made before that point, because that's where it would serve the life purpose or whatever you want to call it. What's your guys' thoughts on that?
Oh, absolutely. David, I see this with clients, and we see it with friends and family members. All of us collectively have had different examples of the red flag going up, you know, the warning signs, whether it being, you know, an example of someone in a negative work environment, and you give them advice that, well, why don't you approach it this perspective and you know, resolve it by expanding your opportunities elsewhere. Well, no, it might just get better. It might just change. And then you encourage them, well, here's this other opportunity. No, it'll get better. It might change. And inevitably it doesn't. And then that person it affects their health. I see another example, the old analogy of a cardiologist treating a patient, and he spends considerable time with the patient and gives them advice and really puts the heart into the patient and the wellness. But then the patient walks out, and as soon as he walks out of the medical clinic, he strikes a match and starts smoking a cigar out in the parking lot. So the person really has to want the will to change their path and the will to heal. While the cardiologist had good intent, if that individual doesn't have the reflective ability to self-reflect, self-accountability, the change isn't going to happen. The karmatic lesson is not going to be provided for that person, and they're still on the same path.
So interestingly, is how do you know? Because you would think, well, doesn't the guy want to be healed if he went to the cardiologist? I mean, I always wonder where is that little dividing point where the guy leaves, walks out there and actually throws all of his cigars into a puddle of water versus lighting one up. It seems like there's one little tiny breaking point. I don't know if it's a quantum thing. I don't know if it's a karmic thing, but I always wonder about that.
The tipping point is what you're talking about.
The tipping point. Exactly.
Good question.
And that's why sometimes I wonder if it is karmic, but then, you know, it's like, well, I used to smoke cigarettes. I tried to quit a bunch of times, but there was one point where I quit and stayed quit. I don't know that was a karmic thing, but I always wonder why did it happen then as opposed to the other times.
Mm-hmm. That's
when it's not karma. So it's really it's a really kind of weird conundrum to try to unravel.
I think this goes back to kind of what we were talking about in previous episodes, where the difference between destiny and free will, because me personally, I have this belief that we have thousands of different paths that we can take in one incarnation, and we switch between these paths by the choices we make and the beliefs that we have. If we make certain choices that lead us down a path that, you know, let's say become huge cigar smokers, and then it starts affecting our health, at some point we may switch to a path where our belief systems and our ideas change to a point where it's like, you know what, I feel stronger about my health than about my habit. At that point, that would be the person that would be at that tipping point. Whereas in an alternate path, they never reach that point. They're like, I enjoy my path as much as I enjoy my health. And no one lives forever. Let's just enjoy the ride while we have it.
Yeah.
Exactly. And there's a lot of variables, though. You know, you got spiritual, religious, you know, cultural influences, network of family and friends, all those variables involved in, you know, what causes the tipping point where they change their karmatic destination. It's really an individual case-by-case basis. But when it happens, you'll see that person, that individual, that friend, that family member totally shift their life direction.
Mm-hmm.
And in most cases, it's for the positive direction, and you'll see a wholeness about them. It's almost like they change for the better. We talk about the examples of, you know, substance abuse as a primary example that I think a lot of listeners will see. They know somebody that either they just can't avoid the drink or whatever be. And then once they've changed, they change as an individual, and they're fun to be around. They're good people to be around. You want them at the family gathering now. Versus before is, oh boy, I hope they don't have another drink, you know?
Yeah.
So exactly. it's those things. It's just an example, but it's a difficult thing to pinpoint what causes the tipping point. I think all of us as intuitives see that when we have clients with us, and we help to steer them energetically in the right direction, but it still comes down to the fact free will. And they all individual are the master of their destination. They still have the wheel that they're driving the car, make a left or right turn, or keep going straight.
Exactly. Right. Exactly.
Yeah. I think that's the one thing that's inviolate. That's the one thing that's non-negotiable in this realm is the free will aspect.
Oh yeah.
In other words, non-negotiable that it can't be taken away. Only the illusion can be created that it's not ours, but it's ours at the end of the day, no matter
what. Yeah, you can influence people, but like what you're saying, when it comes right down to it, it's us. It's our personal thing. And I have to do a shout out back to that episode where we were talking about, well, what about mob mentality, David? If you're so strongly engulfed in mob mentality, you know, people through history have done terrible atrocities. And David,
you said, look, I will not eat a baby, regardless.
I won't eat a baby. Yeah, it's just, that's it. I draw a line in the sand to that. No big amount of mob could make me eat a baby. It's just
exactly. And I loved it when you said that, because that made it so obviously clear to me. It was like, oh yeah, we may have factors in our life that are strongly influencing us. We may have stressors that are working on us that are, you know, moving us this way or that way. But when it comes right down to it, everybody has this line that they will not cross. This line that says, okay, this is where stuff either begins or it ends. It's just, I don't go past that one. That line is different for everybody else. And I think that probably goes back to answering your question about where exactly does that tipping point happen for people, yeah. Is how close they hit that line or not.
That's actually a pretty good call.
Absolutely.
So you guys, Debbie, Sean, this has been actually a blast for us. We've had a lot of fun having you guys on here. It's been an awesome conversation.
Yeah.
So is there anything that you kind of wanted to throw out there or say to kind of cap off kind of what we've been talking about in this episode?
Just that we all have, our paths are crossing for a reason. And I think there's a lot of people becoming more aware of different topics. A lot of knowledge is being and will be released for our freedom of not only technologies, but the truth. And also, once we have those, like David, you were talking, technologies, the money, we won't need money as much anymore. And I'm looking forward to a lot of a time where we come into a different culture of prosperity, and we're not looking about what's in it for me. It's about, let's share, a communal basis of love, of sharing, of knowledge, of you know, what kind of world we really want. And without those factors of the powers that were and are going down, that we have the power to make the world a better place in which we want to be in. And that's, I think, where we're going to be, as well as the people that are coming into our lives at this time are for a reason. And we will be a strength to those that when their world gets a little shaken up, it will be okay, because we'll see the end result.
I would add with that too, is what Debbie mentioned, is that we're definitely, there's a shift going on across the globe collectively. We've seen that from a political perspective in the Middle East, but from a collective consciousness level, the interconnection of our societies is just amazing, how people are becoming more empathic, more sensitive to their neighbor. And you see that on an individual basis. When I meet with clients, I see that. But it seems to be that it's becoming more transcendent on a mass level too, where it's just for me, I'm all in for me mentality is coming out to, hey, what about everyone else? And that's my hope, is that we're shifting to that. I believe we are. And, you know, on an individual basis, we all encounter people that you might say, you know, they just don't agree with you, they disagree, or for whatever reason, you sense or feel that they're just not on the same page. There's a lesson in that. Lesson for them with the interaction with you as an individual, and vice versa. And you just carry on, because collectively, we all are impact each other. And I always like to leave with the expression is that if I meet somebody just for a few moments, I always leave a little piece of me behind, a little piece of Sean behind. And if it's a positive piece, then that's great. Or if it's a lesson, that's even better for that individual as I carried forth in my life. And I encourage people to just consider that on their own capacity and their own individual level, is look at it from that perspective. Because at this point, we still have those two key emotions that we all deal with, love and fear-based emotions. Mm-hmm. Just live life and enjoy it.
And I'd like to add, when we take back our power that has always been there, but we never realized or decided to grab that and own it, collectively and individually, we can do anything.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
Fantastic.
Well, David and I would definitely like to thank Sean and Debbie from Twin Flames Radio for joining us as our guest tonight. And as always, if this is your first episode that you've heard, we hope you've enjoyed it. If you're a longtime listener, we thank you for your patronage.
Thank you.
And we also, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Thank you,
David. Thank you, Donald, for inviting us. We enjoyed the conversation.
Oh, we really enjoyed having you guys. That's awesome. If you want to check out the website, come to TakeTheRedPillPodcast.com. We will leave you the address for Debbie and Sean Michael's Twin Flames radio show in there. So check it out so you can listen to the show. It's fantastic. It's live. It's awesome. I love the calls and the discussion kind of mixed together. It's a really cool format. And if you want to check us out on Facebook, just type in facebook.com/TTRP podcast, and you can find us on iTunes by typing in Take the Red Pill. And we really, really encourage and enjoy participation and feedback and comments on the website and on Facebook.
So for Take the Red Pill podcast, my name is Donald Dalton, wishing that your awakening is a beautiful experience.
And I'm David Deere. Look for the reflections of others in you and of you in others.
Hi, this is Sean Michael.
And Debbie.
And we're with Twin Flames Radio, and thank you for listening.